As President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet shapes up, we check in on what his choices mean for workers and the economy. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Amy Scott, in for David Brancaccio. We're little more than a month away from Donald Trump officially taking over for President Obama in the White House, and it seems every day we get news of another anticipated cabinet member. Marketplace's Andy Euler joins us live now in Los Angeles. Andy, tell me a little bit about his choice for Labor Secretary Andrew Puzder.
Yeah, he fits pretty well with what we're learning about the Trump cabinet so far. He wrote a book a few years back about job creation, and in it he said that excessive government intervention and regulation have suffocated employment. So it sounds like he's going to be in favor of government kind of getting out of the way and letting companies have a lot more freedom. And he has been a critic of an increase in the minimum wage and also of that Obama administration's rule to expand eligibility for overtime pay. Now, opponents have argued that he's made a ton of money fighting against workers' rights.
And I understand he's also embraced automation technology at his Hardee's and Carl's Jr. restaurants, calling it a welcome development.
Yeah, automation's an interesting one because it would eliminate the need for things like cashiers in fast food restaurants and supermarkets. Now, we spoke with Eric Brynjolfsson about this. He's director of the Initiative on the Digital Economy at MIT. He says there's bound to be a wave of automation in a lot of industries.
Automation allows us to create more wealth with less work. The real question is, are we also going to do the necessary retraining and reorganizing the economy so that that prosperity is widely shared?
And that's really the key with this appointment. Is there going to be a way for the government to get out of the way but also protect workers?
Marketplace's Andy Euler, thank you. A new report out this morning has some surprises about some of the sickest and most vulnerable patients in the country. The Commonwealth Fund survey finds that as many as 95% of these people have consistent access to care, but social isolation can make it harder to treat them. From the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
The good news is most of these patients are connected to a provider. The problem is what happens when people are home alone, some with no food in the fridge, others who can't read a prescription label. Dr. Rachel Solotaroff, who works with this group in Portland, Oregon, says the survey shows doctors need to know what's happening in their patients' lives to prescribe the right care.
Your role is to form a trusting relationship with someone, and that you don't start to see changes for a couple of years.
There's interest in this area as financial incentives grow to keep people healthy. Several philanthropies, including the Peterson Center on Healthcare and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation this week, published a best practices playbook. RWJF's Susan Mendy says it offers strategies like coordinating medical care and linking people with social services.
Where can we really get the biggest bang for our buck in terms of improving lives, in terms of avoiding unnecessary costs?
Some remain skeptical this approach will save money. The playbook and the survey are an effort to build a rigorous body of work to understand what's possible. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Italy wants more time from European authorities to rescue the country's third largest bank, Monte dei Paschi di Siena. The rescue was thrown into last-minute confusion by this week's referendum result. Italians voted against a package of constitutional reforms, triggering the resignation of the prime minister. From the European desk, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Founded more than 500 years ago, Monte dei Paschi is the world's oldest bank, but not the most venerable. Kathleen Brooks of City Index says it's Italy's most dangerously indebted lender.
It has a huge amount of bad debt sitting on its in its balance sheet, and it can, you know, the risk is that it could topple. You know, if it fails, then other banks in Europe could also follow suit.
The bank has scrambled to raise fresh capital since failing a European stress test earlier this year. This week, it stumbled. It was just on the brink of clinching a multi-billion dollar deal with Qatar when the Italians voted no in the recent referendum and the prime minister quit. Francesco Guerrera of the Brussels-based newspaper Politico Europe.
Investors don't like to write checks into a period of political uncertainty, especially for a country like Italy, which has had repeated moments of political uncertainty.
The government could bail it out, but that's politically risky. Under EU rules designed to protect taxpayers, bank bondholders would have to take a hit. In Monte's case, says analyst Paola Subacci, thousands of Italian small investors would be deeply aggrieved.
Many of them feel, and probably they're right, that they were sold wrong securities and these are their life savings. So obviously, politically, this is not a palatable solution.
The bank has appealed to the European Union to relax the rules or allow it more time to raise fresh capital. Irene Caratelli of the American University in Rome is confident Brussels will cut Italy some slack. She says the EU wouldn't dare let the Eurozone's third largest economy swing in the wind, as it did with Greece.
That could not happen with Italy. This cannot happen to a country that is so relevant, so powerful. If a country like this sinks, the European Union would explode.
Could not happen, a very bold forecast after everything that has happened this year. At the European Desk, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And one pillar of the American dream, the ideal that children will have a higher standard of living than their parents, is on shaky ground. In a new paper from the Equality of Opportunity Project, economists found that just over half of 30-year-olds earn more than their parents did at a similar age. That's down from more than 90% in 1970. The researchers say lower economic growth and, more importantly, greater inequality in the distribution of that growth have driven the decline in mobility. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. I'm Amy Scott with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.